T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Let's talk Bulls. Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Within the vaulted walls of ancient castles, there comes to life the magnificent masterpiece, Knights of the Round Table.
I have the opportunity to talk with my crew because my crew is basketball crazy. Rick Damkamp does a great job of covering the Bulls for us on 670thescore.com. Tony Gill, one of our podcasters, and covers the Bulls on a daily basis. I like to talk with them about things when it has to do with basketball. Oh, and just a reminder, if you're a baseball fanatic, I am going to give out a couple of tickets to our show with Wilson Contreras and Albert Almora Jr. at the Budweiser Brick House. And if you were paying attention over the last couple of days, man, the place got great food. It's a cool atmosphere, and we're going to be out there for our on-deck lunch. And so before we take a break, I'm going to let you know how you can win a couple of passes. So the NBA draft is tonight. The Bulls are, as it stands, picking 7th right now. So I get the opportunity to kind of chop it up a little bit with the guys on this. Tony, let me start with you. What are you hoping the Bulls come away with tonight?
My dream situation is actually what would impress me the most. I was actually talking to Joe Ostrowski before our show about it, is if they were to trade back. That would impress me the most, if the Bulls would do that. Because, I mean, it's so much like randomness already in the draft. And then this draft specifically isn't all that great. And if their guy isn't there, you know, Garland, White, I wouldn't be surprised if they did, you know, trade back and get some more assets for next year's draft, or just some space to work out in free agency. So that's my dream situation, but it's probably not going to happen. So my second one is probably for them to get White or Garland.
Are those guys there at 7?
It depends. There's been a lot of rumored movement for that number 4 pick amongst a bunch of different teams, Minnesota. That pick currently, obviously everybody knows that New Orleans has that 4 pick via the Lakers. It depends. I mean, I've never heard so much movement in a bad draft before. Like, this is a lot of rumored people coming up, people moving down. I don't know. Honestly, I couldn't tell you. I don't know if they're going to be there for the Bulls to take at 7.
Well, Campy, let me ask you this. I read Tom Haberstroh's piece today, which I think is really good, and he made some excellent points about the top of the draft and how over the last few years it seems that people are getting it wrong when it comes to drafting, that the whole league is getting it wrong for some of the reasons of maybe just not even knowing enough about the players because of mock drafts. And that they're allowing the mock drafts to kind of set what the draft is going to look like, instead of being willing to take some risk on players that they think are maybe better suited for what they run. So we've been jokingly saying this is a 3-person draft. From all the tape that you watch, from the people that you talk to, is that a fair assessment?
Yes, in terms of guys that you can easily see have all-star ability, guys that can be those true difference makers, at least in theory, early in their career. There may be a guy or two that pops after a year or two, or just really maximizes whatever role they have on their team. But in terms of guys that can be real game changers, it sure looks like a 3-player draft, depending on who you... The only person I've really heard push for it to be 4 is Mike Schmitz from Draft Express and ESPN. He's adamant that Darius Garland should belong in that second tier with Ja Morant and RJ Barrett. But other than that, that's why there's so much movement, because it is kind of a bad draft, that between We had Sam Vecenie on Bernstein and McKnight today. He said between 4 and into the early 20s, it's really whatever you want. It's all in the eye of the beholder, and just being able to kind of have a basic idea of where they might have a chance of going. So there's so much variance in this draft, but yeah, I really think it comes down to those three, and maybe, depending on who you are, top 4, and that's basically it in terms of true impact players early.
Who's your favorite player in the draft?
I mean, outside of Zion, just...
It's not that great.
Barren, eh?
It really is. I mean, I loved watching Ja Morant's run in the tournament, just because of how under control he seemed to be of that offense. And I understand it's choosing the top 2 guys, but just how controlled they are while being able to play as fast as they do is really interesting. And I love seeing the debate about what RJ Barrett can be without Zion in the NBA, where he's actually going to have more space. But I also remember that was what a lot of people said about Brandon Ingram. And Brandon Ingram's been fine, maybe not exactly what people thought, but a lot of the talk around Barrett is similar to what I remember hearing about Brandon Ingram.
All right. Well, Cam Reddish is kind of an interesting prospect, and he kind of was behind the veil of what was going on with Zion and RJ. Is he a better NBA prospect than he was college player?
Campy made a good point in saying it's beauty in the eye of the beholder in his draft, and specifically with Cam Reddish, I've heard things from potential Paul George comparisons to all the way to the other end of like he's Andrew Wiggins. You know, I've heard by experts, I'm not an expert, but reading, those are the two extremes for Cam Reddish. Nobody is sure on him. I guess the biggest issue with him is his motor. Can he push himself to take advantage of all his physical gifts? Because he's definitely physically gifted. He's already built for the NBA. He's a very large dude. But is that motor in him to be that good of a player? Is his motor right to take his game to the next level and not hide? I mean, those are issues. He had a lot of space to work with the intention being on Zion and RJ in college, and he did not take advantage of that on a consistent enough basis. He had a couple games where he got really, really hot, but through the remainder of the season, he just kind of fell back, and that's a concern for NBA teams.
He's got to be a better NBA prospect just because he was so bad in college. And maybe it's a lot of the people that back Cam Reddish will say, well, just get him away from those other two stars where he feels like maybe he has a little more ownership of the offense, which, depending on where he goes, that might not be the case. A lot of people mock him to Atlanta if they stay at 8. Well, you've got Trae Young. You know, you can maybe get priority over John Collins or something, but I mean, it's really interesting. He's just that guy that's probably worth a swing because the rest of this draft is so mediocre.
Well, okay, great. I'm glad that we're at this point, because last year, the swing that I was hoping that the Bulls would take was Michael Porter Jr. Is there a swing guy? Is there a guy that has a high enough upside that you guys would be like, okay, look at the Bulls taking a risk if they couldn't get the 2-point guards?
Reddish.
It's got to be Reddish.
Okay.
Because outside of that, there's what, Sekou Demboya? I mean, it's Jackson a forward from Hayes. France. If Jackson Hayes is a Bull, this town should be up in arms, unless it's accompanied by a trade of either Markkanen or Carter somewhere else. Because if you take center 3 years in a row at the number in the lottery, regardless of what pick it is, in the lottery, in this NBA climate, that is, I mean, if we talk about organizational malpractice with the Bulls a decent amount, this would be right up there, because that would be unacceptable to take 3 centers, especially when, I don't know about you guys, but I tend to like a decent amount the 2 that they have right now.
Do you guys like the 2-point guards in this draft better than the free agent options that might be out there for the Bulls?
Well, looking at the options, what you got: restricted Malcolm Brogdon, free agent Pat Bev, free agent Darren Collison,
Corey Joseph,
maybe. the guy at San Antonio, White.
He's not a free agent.
Is he unrestricted? Is he restricted?
No.
Oh, okay.
He'd have to be a straight trade.
Would you guys be okay with trading for Dennis Schroeder? Like, is that collection of guys better than Garland and White?
I think you have to keep in mind with that, it's a contextual question that, at least from what you hear from the guys that are looking years in the future, next year's draft is supposed to be point guard rich. So if the Bulls aren't 100% sold on one of these guys, I don't want them to take a point guard for the sake of positional need. If they don't like that guy, if they don't like whoever it is, if they're not as sold on Coby White as we seem to all think they are, then fine. Then get a stopgap for a year and then go into next year's draft where in theory there should be more point guards, at least, you know, by early reports. I just hate forcing, especially when the Bulls aren't, it's not like the Bulls are good. So it's not like they have one specific need to get them to the next level, which would be like a round in the playoffs. This is to get relevant. Get the best talent you can.
And that's another thing is with this draft and the Bulls in the position that they are, I don't know. I don't feel confident enough to say which direction that they want to go right now. If they choose to say, you know what, we're just going to wait out for the point guards next year, trade back and get, you know, Carson Edwards, you know, or do that. I think that would be a good strategy. And then pay, you know, a stopgap point guard there. That kind of fixes your problem until you have to address it next year. But again, we don't know the direction that they want to go. If you want to be relevant, all right, be relevant then.
Okay. I mean, it's an interesting proposition for them. I'm curious on how all of this is going to play out, because obviously Derrick Rose's name gets brought up, but I feel like there's a couple places that he might rather be, and one of them might be in Los Angeles with LeBron. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world, and part of the reason I don't think he makes as much sense here, that shooting last year to me seems awfully fluky. I just don't know if I'm going to trust his three-point shooting to be as good as it was last year. So does he penetrate enough, and he's a good enough passer to be able to get guys involved? But Derrick Rose off the ball was good last year, but I worry that it was a fluke. I hope it's not, but I worry that it was kind of fluky and that he's still a guy that isn't the most efficient. And for what the Bulls need, having him next to Zach LaVine, if he was starting, or even if LaVine can't, it'd be really hard to have both of those guys on the floor at the same time, even on some second units.
Tony, what type of coverage are we going to have on 670thescore.com tonight?
Oh, it's going to be so fun. So fun. I've already talked to Mitch about it. Chuck is going to be there. He's going to be prepared. Bill Winnington, our guy Steve Cashel is going to, I know I'm going to have a lot of fun because this is my kind of first NBA Bulls draft type of situation. I talked to Cody. Cody's kind of like jaded by the whole situation, but
Cody's a real beat writer at this point.
Yeah, he's like super focused, and I mean, he stayed home to, you know, get all his stuff prepared and stuff like that. I'm just kind of like the wild card, so it's gonna be I'm trying to lighten the mood and bring the fun aspect. Rick is gonna be there. It's gonna be a great time. So if you're looking for Bulls coverage for the draft tonight, that's the place where you want to be. Trust me, it's going to be great.
It's going to be outstanding. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be on 670thescore.com. So you'll have Tony, you'll have Campy. All these guys will be involved inside our coverage. We'll talk with one of the other guys coming up in just a little bit, but I promised you some tickets, so I'm going to come through on that. If you were caller 6 or 7, we're going to hook you up with 2 general admission tickets to join us on Tuesday. I'll be hosting with Wilson Contreras and Albert Almora Jr. at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigley for the first luncheon of the 2019 Cubs on Deck series presented by TimberTech and Xfinity. So if you want to go, you need to call 312-591-6700, and we will hook you all the way up when we come back. What are the Bulls thinking? Cody Westerlund is usually at the United Center. We're going to talk with him about what he knows on what's going on with the Bulls on draft day here on The Score.
I think we've had a pretty good track record at this spot in the draft of finding quality. And what we want now, and we want to get back to being hard-playing competitive team.
That was John Paxson talking with Mully and Haw about what they're trying to do in the draft. I'm Lawrence Holmes. The NBA draft is tonight. We will have coverage on 670thescore.com. And then once the Cubs game is over, it will be on 670 The Score. We got a whole bunch of people involved. Tony Campy, Chuck Swirsky, Bill Winnington, Steve Cashel, David Schuster, and Cody Westerlin, who covers the Bulls for us. He joins us now on Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Cody, thanks so much for joining me. I'm guessing that you are in your war room now trying to figure all of this stuff out. Well, what do you think is most interesting about this draft?
Well, I think it starts at number four, Lawrence, where the Pelicans kind of have the pick on the market to shop. Anyone that wants it can trade up, maybe give them an established veteran a little bit, and go draft Darius Garland if they want, or draft Jarrett Culver if that's the guy a lot of teams have their eye on as well. But that's kind of the pivotal point in the draft right there, is four and five, because we know the Suns probably want a point guard at six. We're not sure what the Cavs want to do at number five. They could go a couple different ways depending on the four pick. But a lot of teams have expressed interest, it sounds like, trading up with the Pelicans, the Timberwolves, the Celtics, the Bulls all have reportedly contacted them. So I think that's where the draft starts to swing. That's no surprise in a three-person draft, but it's kind of about seeing the domino effect after that, I think.
How much do you think what happened last week changed things for everyone? Not just looking at what the Pelicans do, but the entire league.
Well, it certainly opens up the bidding, because the Lakers obviously wanted Anthony Davis, got Anthony Davis in that mega trade there last Saturday. And now anyone that is enamored with Darius Garland can go and get him and take a big risk, because I think that needs to be stated. He's been very impressive in workouts. You know, his background, his shooting ability off the dribble, all that is very tantalizing. But when you got a guy who only played five games because of a meniscus tear, at the collegiate level and still has question marks in his all-around game, you're taking a risk to go trade it. So for the Bulls, I think at least, I don't know that a ton has been changed. They've kind of operated all along that Jarrett Culver probably won't make it to seven, and that Darius Garland probably won't either. And that's kind of the way it continues to trend. So if they wanted to go up and get Garland, they're probably in the same position, probably have a little bit better chance now to go do that, since the Pelicans are shopping the pick. I don't think it would be smart for the Bulls to give up future draft assets and capital to go and trade up to number four for a guy with some question marks and a little bit of risk there. It's different from when the Mavericks traded up for Luka Doncic last year, for example, when he'd established himself in the second best professional basketball league in the world. But there will certainly be a lot of action with that pick as David Griffin and the Pelicans try to sell it.
What is the risk, in your opinion?
Well, he just hasn't established himself, Darius Garland. Like, he can shoot off the bounce. We know he shot 47% on threes in a short-lived time, kind of on the college playing level there. But he's a guy that had more turnovers than assists in that short stretch. He has some question marks defensively. Finishing in traffic's been a question for him as well, and he's coming off a knee injury. So if you're the Bulls, you're looking at it from the perspective, what do we really need at the point guard position? Like, Darius Garland projects very well for the modern NBA with his ability to shoot off the bounce. But at the same time, you got to have a facilitator too, and he hasn't shown that as much. And a lot of that is because, for example, he hasn't had the opportunity to prove it. But this is a guy who most of the information we have on is at the AAU and high school level, not college level. And I really think the risk there is when you trade up for someone, you wish they were a little bit more established just by way of actual evidence. In some of this, Darius Garland's very much in theory a great prospect, but hasn't proved as much because of that opportunity. So doesn't get to the free throw line a ton either, and the turnover prone kind of action for him makes me concerned about him a little bit too, if you're going to trade up.
Is Coby White a better facilitator?
Coby White probably has shown more from a facilitator angle. I mean, he's a guy that plays 100 miles per hour for North Carolina. I think he played at the sixth fastest pace in the country last year, and he was a huge reason for it. They were really efficient offensively. That was a huge credit to him. Which is different from Garland. I guess the question with Coby White is, the reason people like Garland more is because Garland shoots off the bounce better. Coby White's very aggressive going to the hoop. He's an improving passer, but he's not elite at it in the way he sees the court. He also has defensive question marks. So a little bit of difference from them. Same thing with Coby White, a little bit of a streaky shooter, and trying to finish at the rim can be a problem sometimes. But Coby White does have good size, so that projects well for him moving forward. He's about 6'5" there. Another thing with Coby White, too, is he's kind of a combo guard guy. It gets back to the same thing. Do you want a true point guard, kind of traditional with history shows, or do you want these guys who can kind of do a lot of things? And the question for the Bulls is, how do they fit in moving forward, and kind of what do you want to see next to Zach LaVine as you move forward?
Cody Westerlund, who covers the Bulls for us, is joining me here as we discuss the NBA draft. This segment is being brought to you by Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. Get summer savings on everything. Save over $6,100 on a new 19 GMC Acadia and save over $5,200 on a new 19 Buick Encore. Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. For offer details, visit anthonygurnee.com. Cody, I know that you and I have gone over this before, but for people who are just tuning in and they're thinking about the draft, what evolution did you see in Jim Boylen as a coach offensively last year?
Well, I think February would be the first thing I would point to. He opened up the offense more, and the front office had some conversations and meetings with him. No doubt that he came in with the crash and wanted to play rugged basketball, low-scoring games, slow it down, focus on fundamentals. Once he opened up the offense by way of letting them get up the court a little bit more, a little more free-flowing action to let LaVine go, facilitate with him, and have Zach initiate the offense, that helped Lowry Markkanen as well. I think that's the mindset he needs to have. Jim Boylen, that is, as he moves forward and adds a young guy tonight, whoever that is for the Bulls, because that's kind of how they're going to flourish. That's how a lot of the young guys in college play, the way the game's kind of tilting and trending nowadays. So I think the Bulls took a step back in March and April. Certainly a caveat needs to be said that there are a lot of G Leaguers and that type of talent, low-level talent, that he was utilizing at that point when the Bulls had injuries and shut some guys down. But I want to see what the Bulls did in February happen for 82 games, and I think that would help a lot from the prospect and rookie draft edition purposes.
Well, considering, I'll throw the same question you had through at the guys. Are the Bulls better served then in getting a veteran point guard versus maybe trading assets to try and draft one?
I am 100% on board. No matter what the Bulls do tonight, they need to add a veteran point guard. Even if they were to draft Coby White tonight, for example, I don't see why that should hinder them from going and getting Patrick Beverley. They should have $23, $24 million in free agency cap space, the Bulls, that is. So I would go get someone like Patrick Beverley. You know, there's second-tier guys, too, there, like Corey Joseph, Ish Smith, guys who aren't going to move the needle whatsoever at all here. But you have to get a better point guard no matter what you do tonight. So I think those are two separate things. Like, you got to understand Darius Garland and Coby White could come in and be really good players in the future, but rookie point guards, it's such a high learning curve. It's so difficult to come in and play at the pace in the NBA, to just kind of fit in, to get everyone the ball when they want, you know, three-point lines a little farther out. So just a lot of different things for rookie point guard to soak in from that perspective and all the schemes and everything. So the Bulls should still chase the veteran point guard no matter what happens tonight. And I don't think it has to be a perfect complement here where if you take a wing now, you have to sign a veteran point guard or vice versa. Like, you can just take the best player available tonight and still address that point guard position in free agency both.
How many drafts is this for you covering the Bulls?
It's my sixth, I believe. First year was 2014.
Do you think that they have a profile as far as the type of players they like to draft?
Yeah, they like to draft established college players, guys that have safe floors at least, or a little bit higher floors if you go back and look. I mean, that was kind of the Denzel Valentine pick, right? And again, last year with Wendell Carter Jr., not to take anything away from his ceiling because he impressed quite a bit in his short-lived rookie year there a little bit. I think he only played 40, 44 games, but he flashed early. But when you go back to draft night, the question was, you know, are the Bulls going to take a swing with someone like Michael Porter Jr.? The Bulls had worked out Trae Young previously. He ended up going before their number 7 pick. But even leading into it, that was all the conversation. And Wendell Carter Jr. was considered to be a safer pick. So I think that's the way they've trended. Dating back to 2014, the first draft I was at for the Bulls, they traded up and got Doug McDermott, who was one of the most polished and accomplished college basketball players in the history of the game. You know, one of, I think, top 5 or top 6 scorer in NCAA history at that point. So that's the route they've always gone. And I think it's a route they need to be wary of, too, tonight. Because, like, there's a guy there with DeAndre Hunter, established himself as a great player at Virginia, won a national title. a guy who's a really solid defender, catch and shoot guy from the three-point line. But his ceiling probably isn't as high as someone's like Cam Reddish or even a Kobe White. So I guess we'll probably get more evidence of that predicament or just kind of the action the Bulls have always taken in that regard, their habits and tendencies.
You said, you know, a veteran point guard is something that the Bulls need in free agency. Is there anything else that you think could help them that they need?
Yeah, just more better basketball players to bring off the bench. If they don't get a big man tonight, I'm sure they'll add a big man in free agency as well. A lot of names have already been thrown around in that front, including someone like Taj Gibson, former Chicago Bull. I'd expect Robin Lopez, the Bulls' own free agent, to probably go somewhere else. But I would add someone else in free agency to the front court because Chris Felicio, even though he has a couple years left on his contract, pretty much completely fallen out of favor as it pertains to the rotation. And there's not a lot behind Larry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. right now.
Cody, I appreciate all of the great work. I'm looking forward to your coverage tonight. And it's interesting that you bring up, you know, how the Bulls like established players, because yeah, I was reading the Tom Haberstroh piece today, and it was really interesting. I kept thinking about the Bulls because one of the things that was advocated in the piece is maybe you draft players with more college experience versus some of the tantalizing talent that only has 1 year of college experience, because the history of the draft over the last 5 years has been so terrible. I'm wondering if all of us, and that's what the piece was supposed to do, all of us have it wrong when it comes to scouting these guys 1 year out of college or even throughout their college careers.
You know, I see where you're coming from there and what he means. I think something to kind of piggyback on that is we overblow the workouts these guys have sometimes. Like, there's a lot to be said for putting almost 90-95% of the worst in evaluation stock into everything you've garnered in the college basketball season. I think, for example, like Darius Garland, like, he's impressed a lot in these workouts lately, and that seems to have made his draft stock go up. Well, these guys are basically these elite prospects are going 1-on-0, or they're shooting over, like, assistant coaches or running around cones, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, anyone who has a great athletic profile and can hit jump shots is going to look great in those situations. So I do agree that we should put a lot of stock into what they do at the college level, because that's the best competition they faced, or if they're an international prospect, whoever they've played overseas should matter a lot in that regard. So I think it's something with the Bulls. They've been a team that obviously has tilted toward drafting guys with college experience more than 1 year often, although they took Wendell Carter Jr. last year and Markkanen the year before. But that's something that's fun to think about, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out tonight as well.
Cody, thank you very much. Looking forward to your coverage tonight.
Yep, thanks, Lauren.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. When we come back, someone in baseball is doing something real stupid. We're going to talk about it next here on The Score. So this crossed a little while ago from Jeff Passan. Breaking, the Tampa Bay Rays have received MLB's permission to explore becoming a two-city team. The Tampa Bay area and Montreal, sources tell ESPN. The plan, play early season home games in Tampa Bay, finish the season in Montreal. This is... Look, it's real simple. Baseball isn't working in Tampa Bay. How about we move on from Tampa Bay? Or this is a leverage play so that Tampa Bay can get a new stadium, which, again, no one seems to care about the Rays, even though they have been an incredible on-the-field franchise for a long time. Like, they've done things very well. It's so silly. For the player standpoint, like, how is that going to work when it comes to taxes between, you know, playing your half your home games in Canada and the taxes that go along with that versus the taxes of playing in the United States? How does this work for your front office? You're just going to open up a satellite office in Montreal. How does this work for the people that work in Tampa Bay? Do they not have full-time jobs anymore? Or is this part, like, I get that you're trying to figure out a way to explore stuff, but maybe the answer is move the Tampa Bay Rays to Montreal.
Hope the Sox aren't getting any ideas.
They got their stadium out of it, Tony. I don't know if they can do that again. They got a stadium, and that stadium's pretty great. So I don't know if they're going to be able to hold that over White Sox fans' heads and get something new. But I just think the whole thing is just ridiculously silly.
Isn't this just like a prove it to Montreal? Like, okay, you've been complaining about not having a team for a while. Show up when they're there, and maybe we'll give you the team full time.
You know, like, how bad do you want it with Expos fans? I guess you can look at it that way. I just think that there are better places to put a baseball team that I think where people would show up. I'll give you an example. Louisville. Put a team in Louisville. I think people show up. Put a team in Mexico City or Monterey. I think people are going to show up. Put a team in Montreal, more so than they're going to show up for what's happening down in Tampa. And yes, that stadium is awful. Like, we all get it. You guys want a new stadium, but my goodness, like, this is the whole thing is just bizarre. And I really hope that this is simply just a leverage play and we can all just go, that was funny the way the Tampa Bay Rays are like, we're going to go to Montreal for half the season. Okay. I'm going to talk with McNeil and Parkins coming up next here on The Score.
7-5 Cubs, bottom of the ninth. Two down. The Brewers have the bases loaded and a 2-2 count on the hitter. Here's the pitch. Swung on, fly ball, left field. Brant Brown going back. Brant Brown drops the ball. No! He drops the ball.
It came up in conversation last night on the broadcast, so I thought I would share the Brant Brown. I was, my goodness, 4 months into working here, 6 months into working here at that point, and that call was just so great. And Pat Hughes told an incredible story about it on the broadcast last night. As we bring in McNeil and Parkins, who will be taking you up until 6 o'clock today. Hello, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Lawrence. Hello. Always good to see you and hear you. I was on the Ryan when Pat and Ron and Zach were talking about that day in Miami 21 years ago, and it was hysterical. Pat went on to tell the story of how Jim Riggleman, the Cubs manager, had to calm down Ron Santo. Yeah, because he was more upset. They were suggesting maybe that's the first time in sports history where a broadcaster was consoled by the losing manager.
I love the addition of Stoney running into the booth and being like, the Cubs have to trade that guy. He can never play here again. And then, of course, the Cubs did, in fact, trade that guy in the offseason. Pretty incredible stuff from the broadcast last night.
You know, I'm glad it's only two games this week. It's been really fun.
You exhausted?
Well, there's been so much. It's a good diversion today to have the NBA draft, tell you the truth, and we're going to do a ton on it today, and I feel good about that because it's been really, really intense, and it was fun. It was a fun 2 days by the ballpark, and I think everybody experienced that. At least that's my read on you guys and Dan and Connor as well. But, I'm ready to catch my breath a little bit, let the Cubs get back to playing teams in their league, let the White Sox continue with teams in their league.
Yeah, I mean, I just enjoy the hell out of it because whether you're at the game, you're in the area around the ballpark, you're watching at home, you're switching between broadcasts, or you're totally casual with it, there's just that weird civic pride thing that you feel. It's like
the tribalism of it.
And even beyond that side, like, I wasn't mad that Eloy hit the home run 2 days ago because that was cool for the city, and I hope that the city gets the star. So maybe not tribalism of north side, south side, but just like, it's cool to be in a two baseball team town. That is rare. New York has it. LA doesn't even really have it. They've got the Dodgers and the Angels, but the Angels are with Anaheim and it's so spread out and everyone's kind of from there, but not really.
Yeah,
it's
it might as well be in a different city way up north, really, when you think about it. They different airport and everything.
So it's special. It's special to be in a two-team town that is also a cold-weather town that also cares about baseball and is a passionate sports town. It's us in New York. We're the only cities in the country that really can experience anything like we've experienced the last 2 days.
And we got the game we weren't expecting first.
I got what I wanted.
Another one.
I wanted Lucas Giolito despite the weather. I disagreed with you yesterday on that. I got my wish. He grinded. You know, he whiffed nine hitters in four innings and four and a third, I think was the.
If we were spending more time on it today, I would have talked about the decision to hit him, let him hit. It was in the fourth when the White Sox were starting to rally a little bit and they had runners on. I'm like, ooh, you know, if you were a team that was out here playing for wins more than development, you might have considered it. You might have considered pinch hitting for Giolito, thinking, well, maybe he doesn't have it, and this gives us an opportunity to get back into the game. The Tim Anderson thing yesterday, oh.
Hilarious.
Oh.
He had a little Javi Baez in him. I was like, what are you doing?
Bad idea.
And Baez, when he gets called out on those plays like that, it's like, oh, well, he gets the free pass because he's Baez.
And later on, he stole third base.
Exactly. But I'm not sure that Tim Anderson, as great of a start to the season that he's having, has the same credibility of Javi Baez yet, right? Like, those are different calibers of star, but both stars.
No.
So, yeah, Tim Anderson probably shouldn't do that. And that's also the difference between hitting seventh and second. When you're hitting seventh and it's not the heart of the order coming up, all right, you want to press the issue a little bit, go right ahead. When you're hitting second, and White Sox fans talked about that for 6 weeks this season with Rick Renteria. But now when you're hitting second and you get on second and there's no outs and 3, 4, and 5 are coming up, you can't do that.
You can't do that when you're down a bunch of runs and you're trying to get back in the game. And you kind of have Lester on the ropes, too, that he wasn't great yesterday. And there were opportunities for the White Sox to me, the game's over. Like, there was your moment that if you were going to knock him out of the game to get back in the game, it was going to be in a rally in that inning with the heart of your lineup coming up and your second baseman, your shortstop on second base. Once that was over, it's like, oh, well, now you can just play out the rest of this script. They aren't going to come back and win this game.
Man, Lester is a terrible pitcher to have in an era with a juiced ball. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That is scary.
even with the wind blowing a little bit in last night, it's fun seeing the ball leave the yard. I want more juiced balls. I'm okay with that. I want more teams playing in high altitude. Yeah, I think what was that?
Mexico City.
The Rockies. Yeah, that'd be good. The Rockies and the Padres over the weekend. How many runs were scored in that
92.
Four-game series and all the ball. That's fun. That will get people buzzing about your game just like we did in 98 during the great home run race between McGuire and Sosa. We like home runs. We do.
I agree that we like home runs, and I agree with the conversation.
I know that's a hot take.
Well, not really. But like, and everyone's playing with the same baseball, so you have to adjust, but it absolutely affects different pitchers differently. Like when you are pitch-to-contact guy, and like Lester's game plan right now seems to be, let's see if the home plate umpire is giving me 6 inches off the plate. No? Okay. Although yesterday he was. The plate umpire
was.
That was a 27-inch plate for Cubs pitchers.
It really was. It was very, very friendly to the North Side team. But Lester's game plan seems to be, I start 6 inches off the plate. Am I getting that? No. Okay. Then it's 3 inches off the plate. Okay. Am I getting that? No. Okay. Then I'll throw it over the plate, and then it gets hit. Like that's basically the delta of John Lester starts now. If he's getting the call 3 to 6 inches off the plate because he has respect of being John Lester, then he's fine. If not, in this era of offensive baseball and with what he has left in the tank, ball goes very, very, very far.
Yeah, even on a night when it's not supposed to. I was actually a little surprised that they played. Like, having sat through it last night, I was like, This doesn't look fun for anybody.
You know,
did you stay till the end?
It wasn't that bad. I didn't think it was that bad, and I was out where it was windy. I didn't go to my seats. I stood 10 rows. There were 10 rows behind them. There's a concrete area in the right field corner just in front of the rooftops. That's where I was last night with Bob Uecker and the kids. It was comfortable. Now, maybe it's because I was layered and I prepared for the occasion, but
too.
I was comfortable all night.
I layered up, but it was by the fourth inning, and I'm like, man, I'm already like heavy with rain from sitting here. And I kept thinking about, well, what's going on with the field? And they seem to keep it in really good condition throughout the game. I was impressed by that we didn't see any crazy puddles or anything like that. And then you're seeing that there was a heat warmer there in the Cubs dugout.
Yeah.
And guys were getting hand warmers. I mean, it's so strange.
You mean a portable heater?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a heat warmer.
A heat warmer. I was working on that.
Portable heater. They brought it out to the dugout. And then they had the hand warmers for the individual guys. It just looked and felt awful.
Yeah, good for you guys. I'll sit in that weather on opening day and playoff games.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm doing that for regular season.
Oh,
baseball.
Danny, I don't.
The seats were really
great. I didn't say I stayed real long. I just said I wasn't that uncomfortable.
Okay, got it.
It was very toasty in the sports corner. I hadn't been in there in 30 years.
My whole row was gone by the fifth inning. And we were 12 rows off the field.
Okay, yeah, so you were in the good seats. Yeah, those seats are great.
And it was. I was like, man, I want to stick around because I usually try to leave games early. And after six, I was like, we got to go. Like, I'm not going to sit out here for the rest of this.
What's on your wish list for tonight, Lawrence, for your boy Pax?
Here's what will be on his wish list for me. There's no real way I can kill him tonight. You know what I mean? Like, there. To me, this draft is so...
You're underestimating the man.
You might be right, but the draft is so bereft of talent, in my opinion, that I don't know if there's that he could make any trade or any pick that I would go, I hate that pick. It's all just going to be a big pile of meh.
Do you agree with that, Parkins? You know it way better than I do.
I don't think I'd like Jackson Hayes.
Okay.
That kid is a...
Tell me about him. Who is he? Where is he from? What's he do?
He's 6'10". He's 19. He went to Texas. He reeks of Tyrus Thomas.
But that at least to me, I would file that under take a swing.
Yeah, but if they're taking a swing, I'd rather take a swing at a position where you don't have already two young players. Like I don't really get the idea of adding another young big. I feel like you need an experienced big to balance out Wendell Carter and Lauri Markkanen. Like, which one of them is ready to train and develop a 19-year-old? So, to me, best case scenario is Darius Garland because he is ceiling of all-star point guard. And
probably gone.
It would take a crazy set of circumstances for him to fall or you to trade up to him. I think Jarrett Culver is going to be a really good pro.
I do, too.
So, even though you have a little bit of a logjam at that position, Otto Porter's not going to be here for forever. He's only got 2 years left. You can trade pieces. You can never have too many wings who can guard. So I would really like Jarrett Culver. I loved him at Tech this year. He plays D. He can score. That's exactly what the NBA is now, a bunch of interchangeable wings. That'd be great. And then I think you have to begrudgingly be okay with Cam Reddish. I think Cam Reddish you have to be okay with.
Like I said, there's a lot of meh.
But Cam Reddish, yeah, like you could talk yourself into Cam Reddish. Those are the three to me where it's like, and I like Coby White, but I don't know if he's what, I think him and Zach LaVine would give up a million points a game. So, but it'd be really fun. They'd be really fun to watch. So I'm talking myself into getting excited for tonight, and I don't think I'll kill them in all likelihood tomorrow. Don't trade down. Don't trade down.
That's maybe the one thing that I would probably say. By the way, we are Sports Radio 670 The Score, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX and HD2 Chicago, a radio.com sports station. That's probably the one thing where I go, really?
Eh? Buying yourself more time, kicking the can down the road more.
You know, whichever name is called that doesn't elicit an emotion from you that's either positive or negative, Pack still has the ability to say something that will aggravate you.
I'm trying so hard to be fair. Everyone knows where I fall on this as far as the direction of the Chicago Bulls. I want to try and be fair to whomever it is that they draft and give that kid a chance. I'm trying desperately to give Jim Boylan a chance because everyone that I talk to around the Bulls that covers the Bulls likes Jim Boylan, thinks he's smart, thinks that he could come up with something. But I'm just sitting here waiting for meh because that's what I expect. Right. I expect meh.
All right, watch baseball then.
Casey Johnson's story during the week that said something to the effect of, they're looking at it like they need a big almost as much as they need a point guard, and they don't feel like they need a wing because they have Denzel Valentine and Chandler Hutchison.
Come on, fam.
That just can't be true. Not that Casey's reporting it incorrectly, but there's no way there isn't a wing at seven who has a higher ceiling than multiple injury Denzel Valentine
with
no athleticism.
They like Chandler Hutchinson a lot.
I know, but he was a four-year player at Boise who they took at 22. There has to be a wing with a higher ceiling in this draft
you
than
would
Chandler
hope.
Hutchinson.
You would hope.
It has to be. So if they come out tonight and say they passed on a wing because of one of those two guys, that would upset me. Like validating that type of that reporting. And again, not that he's reporting it wrong, but just like that logic doesn't square with me. So there's a few ways I could be mad, and I'd be really excited if they figured out a way to get Culver or Garland. I'd
like both. Meh.
Yeah. I'd like Garland, man. Garland's got a high ceiling.
Yeah, Garland's
he played five games last year at Vanderbilt.
It's the whole thing, though. No,
But you were saying, be fair. If like the move and then the team. Yeah, the team obviously will not be transformed with the seventh pick tonight. The team will still be meh or worse. But the move individually can be graded on its own merits, right?
Okay. I mean, it's just I was kind of excited going into last season, and I've lost all of that. So I don't know if there's even a player that excites me. In where the Bulls are going to be drafting. I don't know if there's, like I'm saying, the extremes, I'm not going to be in them. Because if they do something I don't kind of like, I'm just going to go, okay. And if they do something I kind of like, I'm not going to get too excited because of what happens after that. Unless they were able to find a way into the top three of the draft, and really the top two of the draft, I don't know if it's going to elicit an emotional response to me one way or the other.
Well, if you're ambivalent about the Bulls today, we have you covered tonight. I learned a little while ago, my favorite Chicago Bull, one of them in franchise history, Horace Grant's going to be on 670thescore.com at 6:30 tonight, part of our big pre-draft special that's on the web.
He was at the Cubs game last night.
Was OG there?
Yeah.
How's he look?
He looked great, and Scott Darling was at the game last night, too.
No kidding.
Just hanging out, signing autographs.
Fully bearded?
Yes.
Was he wearing his jersey?
No, he was wearing
sweater.
Cubs gear.
Okay.
He's wearing Cubs gear, but everyone knew it was him.
Yeah.
And people, he like took pictures with folks.
Yeah.
And everything.
I didn't see any celebrities in my section.
Except you. Lawrence, thank you. Will Perdue at 3 o'clock. The McNeil and Parkins mock draft at 4. Unveiling a new game in the 5 o'clock hour we think you will really enjoy. But we started off as we do every day.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.